This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
For an insider's view of your favorite college and professional sports teams, there is no better source than Sports Illustrated. Award-winning reporting along with exclusive interviews. Always be up to date with Spotlight on Sports, coming up next on your audio reading service.
Welcome. This is Spotlight on Sports, and I'm your reader, Pat, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading from Sports Illustrated, November 2022. And now I'll begin with newsmakers. New track. With a pair of drivers in the NASCAR playoffs, an upstart outfit is getting results while attempting to redefine the concept of what it means to be a stock car racing team. This is by Madeline Coleman. Every NASCAR Cup Series champion since 2004, with the exception of one, has come from one of four teams. Joe Gibbs Racing, Team Penske, Hendrick Motorsports, or Stuart Haas Racing. In racing, money wins and money has always won, says longtime driver Justin Marks. And I think if you're trying to tell a story that resonates with millions and millions of people around the world, the story can't be, this rich guy's beating that rich guy. Marks, 41, noticed that those four core teams had another thing in common, the way they were named. They were all sort of the namesakes of very successful owners, he says. As a result of that, there just weren't really any fans of teams. Fans follow drivers. They follow the sponsors, or the car maker, or something like that. So, in 2019, Marks got the idea to start a true team, one that fans would be loyal to. He enlisted Ty Norris, who helped build Dale Earnhardt Inc. in the 1990s. When NASCAR committed to its next-gen car, which is designed to be less expensive and level the playing field, the barriers to entry were gone. They moved forward with their team, one that Mark says represents what we believe the future of motorsports teams can be, and that's truly a sports entertainment brand, an entity that tells compelling stories and unites a fan base and inspires people. They quickly got the house in order, leasing a charter from Spire Motorsports, forming a partnership with Richard Childress Racing for engine parts and aligning with the manufacturer, Chevrolet. They met with a brand team and came up with a name, Trackhouse. They didn't want racing or motorsports in the name to avoid pigeonholing themselves. They got Pitbull, yes, that Pitbull, to come on as part owner. The name Trackhouse worked on two levels. Says Norris, track can mean everything from dropping the needle on the record to a track in motorsports. Then house means home. A house can be a restaurant, a bar, an entertainment venue. It can be a race team. They wanted to own a color, opting for a bold electric blue. For the logo, they combined the T and H with a recognizable slash, something Norris says is to us like a Nike swoosh. That slash can end up anywhere. Marks and Norris, of course, knew that style could get them only so far. They needed drivers. At dinner one night, they were discussing options. We need to be different. Bold. We need to take that underdog role, says Norris. One name that came up was Daniel Suarez, a 30-year-old who was born in Mexico and learned English through cartoons. He won the Xfinity Series title in 2016, but struggled after making the jump to the Cup Series, bouncing around three teams in 4 years. They texted him and later met in person. Suarez had other opportunities. On paper, it seemed like a no-brainer for him to go to a bigger team. Trackhouse, though, intended to build the team around him, creating a support system that Suarez longed for. Once I got to Cup, I never felt like the organization or the team were listening to me, Suarez says. Sometimes it's way better to be a big dog in a small place than a small dog in a big place. He raced full-time for Trackhouse in 21, finishing a season-best fourth on the dirt at Bristol. During the season, Trackhouse bought the racing assets of Chip Ganassi Racing, which allowed them to add a second car. It chose as its driver Ross Chastain, 29, an eighth-generation watermelon farmer from Florida who had also been racing for underfunded teams. Chastain got Trackhouse its first win at Austin in March. Suarez got his first career win at Sonoma in June. When the 16-car playoff field was set, 12 cars from the core four teams were in, but so were both Trackhouse drivers. "We're new, but this isn't just a flash-in-the-pan moment for Trackhouse," Chastain says. "I truly believe we'll be here now for the long haul. I don't view myself as an underdog anymore." Next up is Men's Top NCAA by Kevin Sweeney. The Tar Heels may have stormed to the title game last spring as an 8 seed, but they won't be taking anyone by surprise this time around as they enter the season at the top of the rankings. Number 1, North Carolina. The nucleus of the Heels team that made the 2022 title game is back. Northwestern transfer Pete Nance, 14.6 PPG, joins Armando Bacot in the front court to give UNC the nation's best starting lineup. Number 2, Gonzaga. The Bulldogs have finished first or second nationally in KenPom's rankings in 4 straight seasons, but have no title to show for it. In addition to 3 returning starters, coach Mark Few has another experienced player to lean on, point guard Malachi Smith, last season's mid-major player of the year at Chattanooga. Number 3, Houston. Any Kelvin Sampson team will defend and rebound, but what makes this group special is its guard play, thanks to Jamal Sheed and Marcus Sasser, who missed most of last season with a toe injury. The Cougars added forwards Jarace Walker and Terrence Arsenault. Both were in the top 70 of the SI 99 recruit rankings. Number 4, Kentucky. The Wildcats are the first team to bring back the Men's National Player of the Year since 2009, when Tyler Hansbrough returned to North Carolina. The end result for the Heels that year? A national title. Can Oscar Tishby and the Wildcats replicate that in 23? Number 5, Duke. The Blue Devils will start the post-Coach K era with a stocked cupboard, thanks to the nation's top recruiting class, complemented by veteran point guard Jeremy Roach and transfer Jacob Grandison, Illinois. John Shire's first team will be strong on defense with freshman Derek Lively II protecting the rim. Number 6, Baylor. Expect impressive guard work in Waco as smooth-playing freshman Keontae George joins proven commodities Adam Flagler and LJ Cryer in the backcourt. The Bears are coming off 3 straight top 5 AP finishes and shouldn't have much of a drop-off this year. Number 7, Arkansas. After consecutive Elite 8 appearances, Eric Musselman may have his most talented roster yet. Highly touted freshman Nick Smith Jr., a combo guard with electric hops, could be the best NBA prospect in college hoops this season. Number 8, Creighton. The Blue Jays punched above their weight in 2021-22, winning 23 games with 5 new starters. Now that talented young core will have that year of experience to grow on. Remember the name Arthur Kaluma. The rangy 6-foot-7-inch sophomore forward could be this season's breakout star. Number 9, Kansas. The defending champs lost a lot of firepower, 4 of their top 5 scorers. But junior forward Jalen Wilson, who had 4 double-doubles during the Jayhawks' NCAA tournament run, should be among the Big 12's top players. Plus, Bill Self's incoming freshman class is his best in years. Number 10, UCLA. Mick Cronin has an experienced core, all-conference seniors Jamie Jaquez Jr. and Tiger Campbell, and a 5-star prospect up front, 6-foot-10-inch freshman center Adam Bona. Number 11, Tennessee. Rick Barnes has revived the Vols in his 7 seasons in Knoxville, but has yet to advance past the Sweet 16. Tennessee should excel on D as it did last year, while sharpshooting guard Santiago Vescovi is perhaps the sport's most underappreciated star. Number 12, Texas. There's no doubt the Longhorns have talent after adding top transfer Tyrese Hunter, Iowa State, at point guard, and freshman forward Dylan Mitchell. But the team needs to mesh better than last year's group, which never reached its ceiling, crashing out of the NCAA tournament in the second round. Number 13, Villanova. Kyle Neptune has the unenviable task of following Jay Wright as the Wildcats coach. Before he retired, though, Wright landed top recruit Cam Whitmore, and he'll leave his former assistant three impact players from last year's Final Four squad: Caleb Daniels, Brandon Slater, and Eric Dixon. Number 14, San Diego State. The Aztecs may end up being the best defensive team in the country, thanks to Nathan Mensah, a shot-blocking wizard. They'll have just enough offensive firepower to entertain legitimate Final Four aspirations. 15, Illinois. After 2 years of pounding the ball inside to 7-footer Kofi Cockburn, have a more versatile attack. Cockburn is gone, and in are positionless pieces such as transfers Matthew Mayer, Baylor, and Terrence Shannon Jr., Texas Tech, and freshman Ty Rogers. Freshman point guard Sky Clark must bring the whole group together. Number 16, Arizona. Tommy Lloyd went 33-4 in his first season as a head coach, but lost three key cogs to the NBA. Forward Azulis Tubelis and guard Kerr Crisa give Lloyd something to build around in year two. Number 17, Texas Tech. Mark Adams's patented no-middle defense, which ranked first in the nation in efficiency, gives the Red Raiders a high floor. And while the team has new faces to assimilate into a squad that reached the Sweet 16 last year, this transfer-heavy bunch has plenty of offensive potential, led by 6'11" Fardaz Amik, who averaged 18.9 PPG for Utah Valley last year. Number 18, Dayton. The Flyers soared late after struggling early in 2021-22 and bring back all five starters. Excitement is high for a reason. The young pick-and-roll duo of point guard Malachi Smith and forward Deron Holmes II is special. They led Dayton to 24 wins as freshmen, creating expectations for even more as sophomores. Number 19, UConn. Coach Dan Hurley has reworked the backcourt with transfers. Tristan Newton, 17.7 PPG at East Carolina, and Nahim Aline, Virginia Tech, joining returnees Andre Jackson Jr. and Jordan Hawkins. Utilizing small ball lineups with Jackson at the four to add more shooting around 6'9" junior big man Adam Sonoga could be a winning formula. Number 20, Indiana. Experience is on the Hoosiers' side. They have four senior starters, including big man Trace Jackson Davis, 18.3 PPG, and point guard Xavier Johnson, whose play last year was a barometer for Indiana's success. Number 21, Alabama. Guard Mark Sears, 19.6 PPG at Ohio, and freshman forward Brandon Miller give the Tide upside, but getting point guard Javon Quinterly healthy after a torn ACL ended his season, ended in Bama's first-round NCAA loss to Notre Dame, will be crucial. Number 22, TCU. Much of the squad that nearly upset Arizona in the NCAA tournament returns. The Horned Frogs will again be one of the nation's most physical teams, though they need to limit turnovers better than they did last year. Number 23, Auburn. It's not easy replacing first-rounders like Jabari Smith Jr. and Walker Kessler, but certainly Bruce Pearl did about as well as could be expected by adding a pair of 6'10" forwards, freshman Johan Traore and Morehead State transfer Johnny Broom, the OVC Defensive Player of the Year. Number 24, Michigan. 7'1" Hunter Dickinson led the Wolverines to the Sweet 16, despite uneven play around him in 2021-22. The script could be similar this year, though coach Juwan Howard's son Jet and Princeton transfer Jalen Llewellyn should be valuable reinforcements at guard. And number 25, Xavier. Sean Miller returns as coach after taking the Musketeers to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament twice in his first stint at the school, which ended in 2009. Inheriting wing Colby Jones and a deep front court should position him for early success. Next article is Nothing But Love. After losing in the national semifinals last season, Stanford has hit the drawing board, enlisting what players call a quote-unquote happiness professor and absorbing feedback from former NBA stars like Paul Gasol as it aims to return to the Final Four. This is written by Ben Pickman. Stanford forward Cameron Brink looked on from the bench, having fouled out of her team's February matchup against Oregon late in the fourth quarter. As she sat and watched the waning seconds of the contest, with then number 2 Stanford clinging to a 3-point lead, something clicked in her mind. With 6.5 seconds to play, Agnes Emanopou went to the free throw line. The then sophomore guard would take only 9 shots from the stripe all season and make just 5 of them. On this night, she missed the first. In between the pair, Brink and then teammate guard Alyssa Jerome called out from the sideline, "You're loved, Agnes. We love you." "Just letting her know we're behind you," Brink says now, "it kind of just felt second nature." Emanopou took a deep breath and sank her second attempt, stretching Stanford's lead to 4. A few ticks later, the Cardinal basked in the elation of the victory that kept them in the mix for the Pac-12 title, a win that All-American Haley Jones says was a make-or-break moment for the group. Brink and Jerome's message was no coincidence. Every Tuesday, usually before the start of practice, Coach Tara Vandeveer invited Frederick Luskin to speak with the team. Luskin is an educator, author, and director of the Stanford Forgiveness Project, which researches the effectiveness of quote-unquote forgiveness therapy. With players gathered around him, Luskin would begin his 10-minute meditations with a guided visualization or breathing exercise before raising that day's central theme, usually pertaining to the qualities of grit or the power of love. He would conclude with another interactive component, like asking those in attendance to imagine what a successful practice would look like, or think of someone on the team you were affectionate toward and feel the warmth in your heart. Among the basketball situations he discussed most were high-pressure, late-game moments at the free-throw line. If you're taking a free throw and you're anxious about the outcome, remind yourself that you're loved, he often told them. Like a cool, full-circle moment, Brink, now a junior, says of Emanopou's free throw. Throughout last season, the Cardinals soaked up every minute we could get with Luskin, says Brink, who playfully calls him Stanford's happiness professor. Vandeveer believes he has been helpful to the program. This season, time will be invaluable for the Cardinal. Returning players are especially cognizant of making the most of every second and every game. Over the course of one subpar outing against UConn in the national semifinals in this past April, Jones, a rising senior, went from a player who had never lost an NCAA tournament contest — March Madness was canceled during her freshman season, and Stanford won the tourney during Jones's sophomore campaign — to one who likely has one collegiate run left. Weeks before that, the team and university had been reminded of life's fragility when Stanford soccer goalie Katie Meyer died by suicide. Luskin was among the people who helped the players process initial feelings of grief. Vandeveer sees this year's team as a totally different puzzle to put together, due in part to the departures of starting guards Lexi and Lacey Hall and Anna Wilson, as well as reserves Jordan Hamilton, Jenna Brown, and Jana Van Guytenbeek, the latter two via the transfer portal. Nevertheless, entering this season, expectations remain high. As a team, we have the same goals every year, Jones says. It's an undefeated regular season. Win the Pac-12 regular season. Win the Pac-12 title. Win the regional. Win the natty. Sure, those are lofty aspirations, but they are also not unreasonable, considering the school's talented roster and recent history. It's impossible to exactly quantify how much Luskin helps Jones, Brink, or any one teammate on any given possession. Vanderveer is a traditionally intense coach, but says she has recognized in recent years the importance of finding new ways to reach her players. Luskin helps keep the team centered, says the coach, and fosters feelings of togetherness, which can pay dividends on the hardwood. Stanford's returners have had time to apply Luskin's teachings to an adverse situation, like their abrupt tournament exit against the Huskies and significant roster turnover, and think about their response. We do everything with joy because we all love what we're doing and we love each other, Jones says. The Cardinal are hoping the most euphoric of celebrations awaits. Last April, a few hours before Stanford took the Target Center floor for its Final Four matchup against UConn, Cardinal players were greeted with a pleasant surprise. With the group gathered in a hotel conference room to watch film, Luskin popped up on the projector screen. Players initially complimented Luskin on his haircut, and then he gave the Cardinal a parting message. Not for a second believe that you have failed, even if you lose the next game. Acknowledge success and try and extend it, rather than being afraid of failure. Try as they might, though, Stanford struggled to crack the Huskies' defense. The Cardinals scored only 9 first-quarter points and eventually totaled just 58, their second lowest output since November 26. Brink, having watched the contest again 3 times, citing the team's shooting woes, Stanford finished 34.8% from the field and 17.4% from three-point range. I think we kind of just picked the wrong day to play so poorly, Vanderveer says. We were out of sync. We did not have our A game. In the locker room afterward, the focus of the Cardinal was on their 5 seniors. The veterans had been instrumental in Stanford's title run the year before, creating a fun-loving and mentally tough atmosphere while the team spent nearly 100 nights on the road. Santa Clara County's COVID-19 restrictions forced the team into a nomadic lifestyle. Throughout the 2021-22 season, the quintet anchored a group that bonded through shared time on the court and by seeking out local coffee shops, performing TikTok dances, and creating their own Wordle games on a whiteboard in the locker room, thinking of a 5-letter word and then others guessing different combinations. We genuinely enjoy each other's company. We're kind of friends first, teammates second, Jones said last winter. Players went around to one another's lockers and exchanged lengthy embraces. Brink estimates there were 10 minutes of silence before some of the seniors spoke to the team or coaches shared their wrap-up comments. That was a time where it could have been like, wow, F everything Fred said. None of that meant anything to me. It was all a show, Jones says. In the locker room, it was full of sadness, but I think it was a sadness that was more than a basketball season ending. It was a sadness that was more so centered around that group of girls. That was an end of an era. Stanford's senior class already has a nickname. They call themselves the Funky Four. Guard Hannah Jump and forwards Fran Belibi and Ashton Prechtel are the first 3 in the group, followed by Jones, the lone returning captain from last season. Despite her parents being former co-head coaches for the Santa Cruz High girls basketball program, Jones was a multi-sport athlete. Throughout her youth, in addition to playing hoops, she dabbled in soccer, volleyball, gymnastics, golf, and swimming. That's part of why Haley and her parents see basketball as something she does and loves, but not exclusively who she is. Her father, Patrick, says Haley was an inviting presence, no matter the activity. He recalls her always looking to include teammates as much as possible in drills and organizing games at school. She has been the same way at Stanford. Jones seldom raises her voice. Her family instilled in her a motto, calm is strength. And through 3 collegiate seasons, Vanderveer says Jones has never really shown frustration. The 2021 Final Four Most Outstanding Player brushes off any notions of feeling pressure entering her senior campaign. I think it's more excitement than nerves, Jones says. Part of that anticipation comes from moving to a new role. Previously more of a wing and forward, Jones will be tasked as Stanford's lead ball handler. To prepare, Jones spent the off-season working on her dribbling and perimeter shooting. She trained with skills coach Packy Turner, who has helped other high-profile court creators like Stephen Curry and Sabrina Ionescu. Vanderveer tosses out other guards, like Aces star Chelsea Gray and former U.S. Olympian Teresa Edwards, as possible models for Jones's game. She's kind of the Magic Johnson-type point guard, Vanderveer says, a big, strong, physical player that can go to the basket. Jones continues to foster individual relationships with each of her teammates, seeking to understand everyone's styles and how they like to receive feedback. When you're playing with people that you love, you're going to want to work that much harder for them, she says, her comments echoing sentiments voiced by Luskin. She also hopes to build a level of trust with her peers so that, quote, if I need to yell at them, they'll be able to take it and know, she wants what's best for me, she loves me, and this is for the betterment of the team, end quote. Around a half decade ago, Vanderveer sat in on a guest speaker session with the university's athletic department. The speaker was Luskin, who taught a course on campus called The Art and Science of Happiness. His lecture to the staff focused on the intersection of emotions and sports, and how stress and negativity adversely impact performance. The normal sports psychology talk, he says, but with a decided push toward happiness and what makes people happy. The key? Relationships and purpose. Vanderveer was inspired and soon afterward invited Luskin to speak to her team. Initially, Luskin's sessions with the Cardinal were more sporadic, but they have become more regular due to his limited travel amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Vanderveer and Luskin are aligned on their beliefs, and the coach says hearing the same message from another voice can be beneficial. I think he really grew on everyone, Vanderveer says. I felt he motivated the team. Luskin's teachings have been especially resonant with Brink, who has I love you in American Sign Language tattooed on her right rib cage. She cites his Zoom meetings as being helpful in reframing the feelings of homesickness and isolation she felt as a freshman. Last season, she drew on his messages about thankfulness for others and about avoiding labeling people. When Stanford lost to UConn in the Final Four, past conversations about not blaming oneself or teammates in the wake of struggles ran clear. His teachings are so simple yet so profound, she says. Brink is trying to apply those messages to how she treats the team's freshmen, especially 6'7" center Lauren Betts, who was rated as ESPN Hoop Girl's number one recruit. When Betts performs well in sessions, Brink looks at her in the eyes and says, you're effing killing it. Keep doing that. You're great. Brink also invested in her own growth. She emphasized her mental development. She says she still sometimes gets anxious before games and second guesses herself, so she tries to focus on what she's good at to balance her nerves. I'm good at bringing energy, at recognizing how I feel when I'm in flow. She spent time with various strength trainers and skills coaches to diversify her game and also worked out with six-time NBA All-Star Paul Gasol, who helped her with her footwork and post moves. It was the biggest compliment because he'd tell me a lot, you're a bit like me, she says. You're not going to win by just bully ball. You're going to win by outsmarting people. Players like Brink and Betts will help keep Stanford at the top of the national conversation beyond this year, but the focus now is on the short term and creating a shared purpose. Luskin will continue to engage in weekly meetings with the team and coaches. He plans on occasionally referencing Phil Jackson's 11 Principles of Mindful Leadership. Many are similar to things Luskin has offered in the past, but he believes connecting his work with the Hall of Fame coach will give an intellectual basketball anchor. Stanford has one of the country's most daunting schedules, with non-conference home matchups against South Carolina and Tennessee. Brinks's theory is Vanderveer made the schedule difficult to make us band together. A national title would no doubt be satisfying, but Brink makes clear the team shouldn't be defined by it. "You're so much more than just what you do on the day-to-day," she says. "Everyone else around you is human, and the more you create this environment of love and acceptance and tolerance, the better everyone will thrive." That's the end of that article. Next is Women's Top 25 NCAA by Wilton Jackson. South Carolina and its returning star are the early favorites to repeat as national champions, but a handful of programs look capable of mounting a challenge after off-season boosts to their lineups. Number 1, South Carolina. Aliyah Boston, last season's National Player of the Year, returns for her senior season, which means that Coach Dawn Staley's reigning champions are once again the team to beat. Number 2, Stanford. The Cardinal backcourt will look different following the departures of sisters Lexi and Lacey Hall and Anna Wilson, but senior guard Haley Jones leads a roster stocked with talent. Number 3, Texas. The Longhorns, who reached the Elite Eight last year, have not been to a Final Four since 2003, but the addition of back-to-back WCC Player of the Year, Shaylee Gonzalez from BYU, could help them take that next step. Number 4, Iowa. Caitlin Clark, the nation's leading scorer last year, 27.0 PPG, returns for her junior season alongside talented fifth-year post player Monica Sinano, 21.2 PPG, but the Hawkeyes' key will be getting defensive stops. Number 5, Connecticut. Paige Bueckers will miss the entire season after an off-season ACL tear, but coach Gino Auriemma will be aiming for his 15th straight Final Four behind two freshmen who were top 5 recruits, forwards Ice Brady and Ayana Patterson. Number 6, Notre Dame. After a heartbreaking Sweet 16 loss, the Fighting Irish should come back strong behind guards Olivia Miles, who last year became the first freshman to post a triple-double in the history of the men's or women's tourney, Sonia Citron and Dara Mabry. Number 7, Louisville. The Cardinals lost 3 starters from last year's team, but coach Jeff Waltz still has brilliant junior guard Haley Van Lith and has added 2 exceptional transfer guards in Morgan Jones, Florida State, and Kristlyn Carr, Syracuse, in addition to bringing in a solid recruiting class. Number 8, Iowa State. Continuity could be the key as senior wing Ashley Jones gives the Cyclones a strong All-American candidate. Plus, junior guards Emily Ryan and Lexi Donarski could prove to be the Big 12's best backcourt. Number 9, Tennessee. Though Ray Burrell is now on the WNBA Sparks roster, the Lady Vols are still loaded thanks to freshman wing Justine Pissot, King veteran returners, and the transfers brought in by coach Kelly Harper. Number 10, NC State. Wes Moore's program is coming off its first Elite Eight appearance since 1998. The Wolfpack bring back 3 vets, junior guard Diamond Johnson, senior wing Jakia Brown-Turner, and senior center Camille Hobby, who will keep this team in the ACC fray. Number 11, Virginia Tech. The Hokies, looking to bounce back from an opening round tournament departure, add 2-time All-American guard Ashley Owusu from Maryland and grad student forward Taylor Soule, who averaged 16.0 points for Boston College last year, to a team led by senior center Elizabeth Kitley, the reigning ACC Player of the Year. Number 12, North Carolina. The Tar Heels gave the eventual champion Gamecocks all they could handle in the Sweet 16 last year and returned 4 starters, include junior guard Deja Kelly, who was 4th in the ACC in scoring last season with 16.5 PPG. Number 13, Indiana. The Hoosiers followed up their best season in program history in 2020-21 with another superb one last year, 24-9. Indiana will now compete for the Big Ten title behind grad student guard Grace Berger and senior forward Mackenzie Holmes. Number 14, Oklahoma. In Jenny Baranek's second season as coach, The Sooners return all key players from last year's 25-9 squad. Sharp shooting guard Aubrey Jones, the sister of Iowa State star Ashley, joins what should be a high-powered offense. Number 15, Ohio State. The Buckeyes have two key scorers back in senior guards Jason Sheldon and Taylor Mikesell, but they will need production from the paint if they want to build off their finish as Big Ten co-champions. Number 16, LSU. Hall of Fame coach Kim Mulkey led the Tigers to 26 wins in her first season with the program. This year's retooled roster will feature Alex Morris and Maryland transfer Angel Reese. Number 17, Maryland. The Terrapins lost five players to the transfer portal, but restocked by pulling five out of it, including grad student forward Bryne Alexander, who was All-SEC last year at Vanderbilt. Number 18, Arizona. Coach Adia Barnes continues to be one of the sport's preeminent recruiters and tacticians. Lost in the second round of last year's NCAA tournament, a roster rich with budding talent should have them ready to take another shot. Number 19, Baylor. After losing two first-round picks in the WNBA draft, the Bears won't dominate the Big 12 as they did last season. But coach Nikki Collin enters year two with five returners, plus some high-profile transfers and a top-notch recruiting class led by guard Bella Fauntleroy. Number 20, Oregon. One of the Ducks' front court stars from last year, Nayara Sabali, turned pro, but 6'7" senior forward Sedona Prince is back and will serve as anchor. A great returning class features two McDonald's All-Americans in guard Chance Gray and forward Grace Van Sluten. Number 21, Creighton. The Blue Jays, after a thrilling run to their first Elite Eight, bring back eight players, including Lauren Jensen, who shot 43.7% from three last year. While coach Jim Flannery will miss Tatum Rembo, the program has high expectations. Number 22, Princeton. The high of upsetting Kentucky in last year's tournament didn't keep the Tigers from losing Ivy League Player of the Year Abby Myers to Maryland. But they will bring back their next two leading scorers, guards Julia Cunningham and Caitlin Chen. Number 23, Georgia. Katie Abramson Henderson arrives as coach from UCF, where her team won a school record 26 games last year. She brought a trio of players with her and secured fifth-year wing Audrey Warren, Texas, from the transfer portal. Number 24, UCLA. After making the WNIT semis last March, the Bruins entered this season with perhaps the country's best freshman class, highlighted by Premier Basketball's number 2 recruit, guard Kiki Rice. And number 25, Belmont. The Bruins have pulled first-round NCAA tournament upsets in back-to-back years and will look to take another step forward. Two key players, junior guards Destiny Wells and Tootie Jones, return to an offense that loves to shoot the three-point ball. Next up is the Great Wide Open. Pass-catching connoisseurs across the NFL have come to recognize four star receivers for their unique ability to leave defensive backs in the dust. This is how Davante Adams, Ja'Marr Chase, Cooper Kupp, and Justin Jefferson do it. This is written by Connor Orr. Have you ever watched a game and wondered why a defense can't prevent the ball from going to the one receiver everyone knows is getting it? Is it reassuring to know that many coaches have wondered the same thing? At this point, you surely know about the rule changes that have encouraged more passing and led to historic offensive output. You also have heard all about the forward-thinking passing concepts that are slowly, sometimes begrudgingly, absorbed from the lower levels of football, allowing rookie receivers to adjust to professional football faster than ever. But what you might not have picked up on is precisely why the NFL's best pass catchers, and specifically a certain quartet of them almost universally recognized by coaches and players as being a cut above the rest, get open on seemingly every play. In the aughts, the position stars were outsized behemoths with track star speed. Think Randy Moss and Calvin Johnson. And today's game still features some outliers in terms of physical traits. Miami's Tyreek Hill, for instance, is considered nothing special when it comes to the nuances of pure route running. His world-class speed and quickness allow him to either blow by opposing defensive backs or force them to play him with so much cushion that he feasts on quick throws. But consider the four receivers hailed by a cross-section of coaches who spoke to Sports Illustrated for their ability to get open under any circumstances. There's the Bengals' Ja'Marr Chase, the NFL's reigning Offensive Rookie of the Year, listed at 6 feet even, far from the domineering stature of the last generation's power forward on the gridiron trope. Cooper Kupp of the Rams captured pass catching's triple crown last season, leading the NFL in receptions, receiving yards, and TD catches, and is an elite athlete in many ways, but clocked in at a methodical 4.62 seconds in the 40-yard dash at the 2017 NFL Combine, slower than, among others, five tight ends and two defensive linemen that year. 3 years before that, Davante Adams, now of the Raiders, ran a forgettable 4.56 in the 40 and started his NFL career similarly slow before a third-year breakout in Green Bay. The fourth member of the route-running Mount Rushmore, Minnesota's Justin Jefferson, sizes up a little better, 6'1", 4.43 40 time at the NFL Combine, but his measurables are less than mind-blowing. It raises the question, how are these men simply unguardable? Beyond physical gifts, the receiver position requires a kind of instantaneous brain response system more fitting for an astronaut or a poisonous snake wrangler. Not to mention, a great receiver must be perpetually starving for his quarterback's approval, willing to rip a ball out of a defensive back's hands for a meager gain. But they also must be eternally calm and quietly calculating when it comes to running routes. They must possess a transcendent understanding of the human psyche. They must be experts in close-quarter deception. They must harness and foster a flair for the dramatic. Like a good storyteller, they must choose when and why to reveal the secrets they've been keeping. They must lie, and they must be convincing. Receivers are in the business of always selling something that we're not doing, or at the very least, not giving any information away, says Brian Hartline, a longtime NFL receiver and current wide receivers coach at Ohio State, of the position's battles with opposing defensive backs. Any information we do give away, we want the opponent to have. That's the art of running routes. They only do what we tell them to do based on the information that we give them. When it comes to Adams, Chase, Jefferson, and Kupp, the broad reasons they're constantly getting open is because they're more deceiving. They are better storytellers. They are increasingly in tune with the psychology of defensive backs. Studying them, as almost any coach or competitive player at the collegiate level does now, reveals why today's NFL looks and feels the way it does. Through interviews with NFL coaches and positional experts, we can better understand why four men, who measure up similarly to so many colleagues across the league, can make their current dominance look so effortless. In other words, we can reveal at least some of the secrets to their success. We'll start with Cooper Kupp, Los Angeles Rams. This is the quandary facing any defender lined up across from Cooper Kupp in a play's first split second. Is he going to run a route, in which case I want to stick with him? Or is he going to try to block me, in which case I need to get away from him? He does all the other things besides play wideout, says Zach Azani, the Broncos wide receivers coach, who is regarded as one of the league's top instructors at the position. He blocks safeties. He pulls around through a hole and blocks the most dangerous linebacker. He's cutting off defensive ends. He's doing all those things that set up bootleg runs and naked play-action passes where it then looks like he's going to block an end, but instead just shaves the end and comes back out to get the ball and run for 15 yards. They play off each other. Half the catches he has are off the run game. Kupp is much more than simply a player taking advantage of the fact that he's a two-way threat. There are receivers coaches who will describe Kupp's route-running ability the way instructors at a prima ballerina school might talk about Anna Pavlova. In that sense, he is an absolute perfectionist. He has his first step off the line of scrimmage analyzed by a team of researchers to ensure its effectiveness. Just watch him in Super Bowl 56, squaring off against Cincinnati quarterback Eli Apple with the game on the line. A hard step inside, an arcing step outside, and a backward 90-degree spin in the air. Super Bowl-winning touchdown secured. However, it is Kupp's effectiveness in the entirety of the team's offense that sets him apart. Contrast his final catch of last season with his first catch of the 2021 season against the Bears. It started off as a blocking assignment. Facing Khalil Mack, one of the most feared pass rushers in football, Kupp threw his right shoulder into Mack's chest, holding him at the line long enough for quarterback Matthew Stafford to complete an elongated fake handoff. This small gesture opens up a limitless number of possibilities for Rams coach Sean McVay, who can use Kupp as both a decoy and a weapon, sometimes simultaneously. If, on every snap, the defense cannot tell whether Kupp is blocking or running a route, its default position is one of hesitancy and confusion. From there, almost like a boxer whose opponent is forced to keep their gloves away from their face for the first minute of every round, Kupp's precise movements carry an additional potency, turning an inch of open space into a mile. Next is Davante Adams, Las Vegas Raiders. The saying in our room is, the best problem solvers are the best route runners. This is Brian Hartline's way of introducing a video segment on Davante Adams, the one he was adamant his young players take in. It's an interview with the Raiders receiver from the Pivot podcast, commenting on how he approaches the line of scrimmage on every snap. Every coordinator will admit that their defense has weak spots, and Adams has downloaded all the options on how to expose those gaps to his brain where they're available for immediate recall. For each coverage style the man across from him might be playing, press coverage, a 2-yard cushion, a 5-yard squat, Adams says he has 3 ideas of what I'm going to do based on his opponent's technique. In one example, Adams says he wants to get outside of the defensive back, meaning toward the sideline as opposed to the middle of the field. To do that, Adams may display all the characteristics and body language of a receiver wanting to gain inside leverage. A receiver can stand before his defender for only a matter of seconds before the ball is snapped. In Adams's mind, that's more than enough time to put on a miniature one-man show of mental subterfuge. The repercussions can resonate throughout the rest of the game. At the end of the day, it's about the presentation, Adams says in the clip. If you're in front of me and I make you feel like I really want to get inside and I show you everything that looks like I'm getting inside, you've got to respect that. And if you don't, I'm going to go inside. As a result, the available data to the opposing coaches and players trying to get a read on him is scrambled constantly in real time. That goes a long way in explaining how Adams has made 5 straight Pro Bowls and eclipsed 1,300 yards receiving in 3 of his last 4 seasons. It also explains why a lot of teaching tape in the league begins and ends with Adams, the best problem solver in the NFL. I've watched every single target Davante has had in his career, says Zach Azani. He has the innate ability to understand leverage. Davante goes to the line of scrimmage, and however that corner or nickel is playing him, he already has it figured out based on the leverage. Some guys don't have that feel. And next up is Ja'Marr Chase, Cincinnati Bengals. Quarter of Super Bowl 56, Ja'Marr Chase, lined up wide and to the right, broke into a sprint toward Jalen Ramsey, the best cornerback in football. Something in Chase's gait or his eyes caused Ramsey to break down, expecting Chase to stop and cut to one side or the other. Instead, Chase threw his body into another gear, buzzing past Ramsey and immediately looking to the sky, where a ball that appeared just slightly out of his reach was already in the air. He fell to one knee, nesting it on his forearm. Afterward, backed against a cacophony of cheers from a stunned crowd, color commentator Chris Collinsworth said, "He is one of the great finishers of catches I think I've ever seen. This would be like calling Louis Armstrong one of the finest carriers of brass I've ever heard. So much of that play happened before he touched the ball." When talking to coaches in the wide receiver world, Chase is foremost praised for his body control. His steps are considered deliberate, and as one coach puts it, powerful. And that restrained running style creates a natural level of deception against opponents trying to figure out not just where he's going, but also how fast he'll get there. You look and you're like, okay, I'm looking at a 4.5 40 times, says Brent Callaway, a speed and strength coach for Exos, who worked with Chase before the 2021 draft. Then you look down at the clock and you're like, my gosh, that's high 4.3. That's not what it looks like. So you realize that there's a level of effortlessness that I'm sure people saw with Jerry Rice, like, oh, he's not a fast guy, but you never saw anybody catch him. It's almost like he lulls you to sleep. Watching Chase is a bit like watching a 400-meter dash. At the final turn, a runner who had never drawn your eye is opening a sizable lead with measured steps. He looks no faster than anyone else, and yet there he is, overtaking the pack down the home stretch. And of course, the idea that he cannot only make the fast part of a route look a little slower, but also carry out the slow part of the route, the top end, with incredible quickness, is a nightmare for defensive backs. Cincinnati coach Zach Taylor says Chase's raw skills are coupled with an obsessive work ethic. While the idea of staying after practice and working long hours with your position coach has transcended cliche in the NFL, Chase's drive to understand what makes him effective is yielding serious production. I've been around Cooper Kupp, and Cooper was extremely similar, says Taylor, a former Rams assistant who overlapped with Kupp in L.A. We're just fortunate we have Jamar. When your best players are your hardest workers, that really sets the tone for the team. And last is Justin Jefferson, Minnesota Vikings. The wide array of routes you'll find in a typical NFL offense can, in some coaches' minds, be broken into two distinct categories, routes on which you run away and routes on which you break down. For example, on a post route, where a receiver runs straight and then makes an angular break toward the middle of the field, he's trying to pull away from a defender. On a curl route, where a receiver sprints straight ahead before hooking back toward the quarterback, his body is breaking down from top speed. T.J. Hauschmanzuk, an 11-year NFL veteran and now one of the most sought-after position-specific experts in the personal training space, says that Justin Jefferson is the master of the runaway route. It all starts with three short steps. As Hasmanduk explains, imagine you're on the left side of the formation running a dig route, which starts out with the receiver selling a deep, vertical route before snapping back with a 90-degree cut to the middle. You want to cut to the right, so you step with your left foot, then step wide with your right foot and push off toward the left, feigning a move to the outside, then step with your left foot, pushing off back to the inside to make the cut. The move is called a rocker step. When you do that, it puts the defensive back on his heels, and he gets in kind of a guessing situation, wondering which direction you're going to break. He mentions two receivers who can pull it off at top speed, Cooper Kupp and Jefferson. Especially Jefferson, he says. Just go watch him. He doesn't lose speed when he makes that move. Jefferson has plenty of other elite traits that set him apart, as well as a hunger to snatch the ball away from cornerbacks. Those contested catches, which can look like street fights, give him a combination of finesse and tenacity that has earned Jefferson, in just his third season, comparisons to a young A.J. Green. He puts it all together in a way where there's nothing from the standpoint of the route tree or concepts that you feel like he couldn't be a top-end player with, Vikings coach Kevin O'Connell says. It's just the versatility of what he does. That's the end of that article and is all the time we have for today. This has been Pat with Spotlight on Sports. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.